to Toffeecast. This is your one-stop shop for all the news and views on everything that happens at Everton Football Club. As we go into Christmas, it's been a bit of a disappointing period for Everton, but we're hoping that we can turn things around with a few tough but important games over the Christmas period. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce me mate, Chris Jono. How are you? You all right?
All right, Andy. I'm Sam, mate. You okay, buddy?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. It's Christmas Eve here. Finished work for the year and just looking forward to a nice Christmas break in the sun, although it's raining and it's cloudy and we're not sure what's going to happen tomorrow, so you can gloat away. Because it's probably better than you are at the moment with global warming.
No, definitely isn't, mate. Definitely isn't. Well, tonight before here, so I'm doing a bit of Christmas wrapping. So if there's any background rustling, I do apologise, but I'm afraid it's just the way it is. Because I've got to get me wrapping done because I won't have time tomorrow. So I'll try and be as quiet as I can, mate.
Fair enough, mate. Fair enough. Well, I guess what we'll do, we'll start off. I mean, you know, you're saying it's background rustling. Are you sure you're not working for this consortium who's trying to buy the club, like going through the trying to find the assets money?
Well, I don't live in a one-bed flat in Manchester, mate, so that rules me out the equation, doesn't it, as a potential buyer.
Fair enough.
So that was the last fella, wasn't it? There was some fella who ended up in a one-bed flat in Manchester that was trying to professing to be able to buy the club, but anyway,
I hadn't heard that one. Flipping heck,
haven't you heard that one, mate? No, but that's how it all one of the many panned out. But
it wasn't Phil Neville's flat.
I don't think he had a one bed, mate, somehow. we'll touch on that briefly later, eh? But I have to say the worst thing about this podcast is that when we started it, we agreed that we'd do it without swearing because week on week, mate, it's getting harder. to talk about us without using certain words, because I'm really getting at the end of my tether with it all, to be honest with you. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I tell you what, Chris, our feet must have that many bullet holes in them now, because we don't have to keep shooting ourselves in the foot. It is so frustrating, the individual mistakes that are costing us points. And we're I'm a bit more of a blue sky kind of person, like, you know what I mean? I try to reach for the positives and things, and I look at the league table and we're 5 points off fourth, you know, where Tottenham are. But at the same time, you try and look at that positively, but you consider the points that we've just lost in the last few games. It is so frustrating. You know, if we got the win against Norwich and the win against Crystal Palace and the win against Bournemouth, you know, you're going from you know, you're putting an extra 6 points on there, and that will put us, as I say, we are actually 6 points off there, so that'll put us up there, you know, above Louis van Gaal's Man United. So, by the way, I mean, they're rubbish. Although they beat us 3-0, but that day was a funny day. We've already talked about anyway. But by the way, I hope you're all enjoying your glass of wine and your mince pies out there, by the way. you've seen Van Gaal's press conference?
Yeah, I've seen the headline. What did he say? I don't know what he actually what he said.
Well, to be fair, he had a point, because they're all writing him off and everything like that. And, you know, my feelings about getting rid of managers too soon and things like this. He's got a young squad. He's got young players who are, you know, still bedding in. Some have come from abroad. So it does take a bit of time, and they're all crying for his head over there. And he's just said to the press, like, you know, I didn't really want to talk to you today. I'm here because the FA have got a rule. So, but I'm motivating the squad. I'm, you know, been working hard with them this week, as I do every weekend. You know, I'm just paraphrasing here. And he said, Merry Christmas, enjoy a glass of wine and a mince pie. And he buggered off. It was quite funny. Yeah, mate. Yeah.
I can't be with them. I think the man's an idiot. I've got no time for it, Van Gaal, whatsoever. I just think he's a clown. It's a matter of time before he loses the job. The arrogance of the man is just knows no bounds. But anyway, we're not here to talk about them, are we? We're here to talk about us. But, you know, to be fair, we've all watched Everton long enough. We know that sometimes you win games, sometimes you lose games. Sometimes you lose games you deserve to win. So, you know, occasionally we'd up a point with the way we deserve to lose. You know, that's just the way it is. And in principle, I agree with you. You know, we talked about Gary Monk the other week, and I was disgusted that he'd lost his job for a number of reasons. He was doing a decent job in the main. They were playing a certain way. He'd sold the best striker from underneath him, and he was conducting himself well. And with the greatest of respect, it's Swansea City. They need to remember who they are. You know, okay, they have had a start that's been poorer than previous seasons, but if they were happy with the way the team were playing and so on and so forth, then, you know, he deserved a bit more of a go. The problem with Martinez is, forget the results for me for now, without sounding like him, who says points don't matter, which is basically, I'm paraphrasing, you know, it's not about how many points we pick up. No, sorry, mate, it is. That's exactly what it's about. Because we're a professional football club, and that's exactly what it's about. So we've made a mistake there. But his holistic approach just doesn't work. You know, I'm sure on a Saturday morning when he gets up, number six on his agenda of things to do is pick up 3 points. It's a bit like, it reminds me of when as I've said on more than one occasion, running kids' footy teams. When they're little, it's all about, you know, you're a team, you work as one, you trust each other on the ball, we will develop as a team together, you know, we win as a team, we lose as a team, because you're trying to teach the kids the principles of football, sport, teamwork, etc., etc. And basically he does the same thing. Well, that's great to a point. But the overriding thing is you've got to win the game. Kids footy, you don't have to win the game. You don't. Professional football, he's got to win the game, and he's got to put that focus on winning the games and start putting a few people under a bit of pressure, including himself, to try and win these games, rather than the approach, because what he says is right, because that's the way the team play out. We play out all about possession without any real threat. We don't change the way we try and do things if there's a few minutes left. It's all very samey, and everyone knows exactly how we play, which is why we're getting beat by these teams. Because I'm not being funny, Leicester, I don't care where they are in the table, man for man, they should be nowhere near us. And everyone knows how to play us. You know, Neil Warnock played us like a fiddle 2 years ago when he was managing Palace. And it was exactly the same on Saturday. After ball, Everton, you'll make your own mistakes. And then the goals we can see, the throw-in flicked on. Morey gets the wrong side. Penalty. Don't care what anyone says. It's a stonewall penalty.
And he let it bounce.
He should have cleared it.
He let it bounce, which is criminal.
He let it bounce and tried to jockey it out.
Yeah, it was on his wrong foot. You know, you know, and I'm sorry, but at the end of the day, the goal was totally on him. It was a clear penalty as well. But basically, you know, it all starts from he let the ball bounce because he thinks, yeah. Well, it's, you know, and really, he should have just been putting his right boot through that and get it up the pitch. And I do think that, you know, we need a little bit more of that in our side. So, you know, it was very poor. It was two decisions that he made there. One, not to, you know, to get rid of the ball there, and to try and see it out. And number two, you know, the lad was still going nowhere at that point, you know, to actually just put his hands on him, especially with that referee, I've got to confess, I haven't seen the whole game this week for the first time all season, which is quite frustrating. That wonderful thing that we have over here where we get to see every game. Please excuse me, just the dog. Chewing with his toy there. All good.
All right, mate. Well, between your rustling and my rustling and your squeaking, mate, it's going to be an interesting listening. Yeah. for.
But I haven't seen that whole game. Yeah, it's Christmas. Yeah, let's get stuck in. It's all good.
Get away with murder.
Yeah. But as I say, the dog, that referee, he's never had a good game with Everton. He's a poor referee. The two penalties, they were both stonewall penalties. And this is a referee who I've got it in for. So, I'm only kidding about that. But, you know, this is a referee who I think is very, very poor. And, you know, you can't fault him for the two things there. I thought that each of the three goals was preventable at the end of the day that we conceded. And it was said, somebody summed it up. I read the other day, and I think I just mentioned this to you before, Chris, that Leicester have got to the top of the league by playing on the, identifying a weakness of their opponents and playing on it. And our weakness is that if you give us the ball, we'll shoot ourselves in the foot. We'll make a mistake at one point in the game. So, yeah, I don't know.
We've done that for years, though, mate. It's not like it's new. That's why we're so easy to beat. Because, you know, we do it all the time. We can rely on ourselves every time to make them mistakes, and we do. And it's just that people are laughing at us, mate. People are laughing at us as to how easy we are to beat, you know. But it's Martinez. He's just got no interest in defending. He just sees defending as an opportunity to attack. Well, that's great sometimes. But when you're trying to clear a ball from your own byline, number one priority is to defend it. When you're defending a corner, number two priority is maybe create an opportunity to score on the break. But number one priority is to defend the corner. Simple as that. And, you know, that's the difference between him and Moyes.
Well, it is.
And it depends how you view football, really.
Is what he said after the game. He said, for us to concede three goals in the manner that we did is very frustrating. We conceded soft goals, two of them from throw-ins, one in our favour and one in Leicester's favour. That's something we need to learn from. We can't just allow the opposition, with so little threat going forward in the game, to score three goals. That's the difference between being able to win a game and not. And that's where the frustration is with all of us. So, he said the first penalty, we need to do better. You ask the referee to make a decision because there is contact. Is it a penalty? It's a decision you can understand both ways. I've seen them decisions given and not given. But at the end of the day, the key to that...
He won it.
Yeah,
the player won it.
Yeah.
You know, if he didn't really touch him, but by getting the other side of Mori, that he'd done his job. Because there was always going to be contact because he was on top of him.
Yeah.
So it was inevitable. But I had to give it. I just look at every decision from where I sit. Because, you know, as much as we're all blues or whatever, I try to be honest with every decision that I see, because if you're not, you're only kidding yourself.
Yeah.
And I had to give that. If I was reffing that, I had to give the penalty. So
he was right.
There's not an awful lot more I can say on it.
Well, what Martinez then said was, up until that point, Leicester hadn't got into our box, so I thought we should have been a bit more cool when defending that.
And he's right there.
He's spot on. It's composure, you know? And this is a thing that I think we lack throughout the side, is that composure. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. There's aggression and composure at both ends of the pitch. We probably have a little bit more composure up front than we do at the back. And I guess part of that is missing Jagielka in there. I think more.
Yeah, but he's not a leader either, and he's not a leader either, really. He is in comparison, but he's not a proper leader. He's too quiet. He's not niggly enough. He's not dirty enough. I was there's a fella who I know who I follow on Twitter. He follows us. I don't see him. I know him because I did my coaching badge with him a couple of years ago. But he's Graham Sedna's name is, he's big on Twitter. He's got loads of followers, like, or Seddo. I think he's Seddo 1984. I think he is. And he's been shouting for Everton to sign a player for 18 months. And we were having a bit of a go on Twitter the other day. And someone had said, you know, we need a real narky centre half. You know, someone that's got a bit of something about him. And I just teed him up and went, tell him Seddo. And it's Ryan Shawcross. Ryan Shawcross, English, no nonsense, uncompromising, niggly, centre half. That's what we need to play with John Stones.
But we're not going to get him. It's that simple. He's at Stoke, and he's been at Stoke for a while. And they're a point behind us in the league, if that, Stoke. And he's club captain.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Stoke are a well-run club who had invested in players. He's not going to leave that club to come to us because it's a sideways move.
It's if the money's right. It's all about money.
This is the point I'm making now, Chris. He's not going to be on a bad wicket at Stoke. You know what I mean? He's club captain, so they'll pay him the club captain wages there. They're a club that's basically been very well run, and they've invested in some expensive players. I'm sure he'll be on you know, top dollar there. He'll be on good money there. So for me, I agree completely with you, in that he's exactly the type of player that we need at the back. I do like Jagielka, in that, and I think he's played very well over the last year, after his wobble after the World Cup last season. Once he improved, once he got his confidence back a bit, I thought he was our best player last season. He's a different type of leader on the pitch, in that he leads by example. He's not a talker. There were times, I think back to the European games last season. The one where we got knocked out last season, to Kiev. He actually made runs forward in the end, trying to urge his team on. You know, I remember him at one point here appearing out on the left wing. You know, and just his effort and his endeavour after making a block. I think he'd actually, made a run off the ball up the left wing, trying to just inspire his play, you know, his teammates there. So, but we do miss that indomitable Dave Watson type centre half. You know what I mean? That real aggressive, strong. And we did try to, you know, the thing is, we did try to bring in Scott Dan earlier this year. And he chose to stay at Crystal Palace, who were another well-run club. And he got a new contract with them. They must have, as I say, offered him good wages. He's also a dirty red, though, so, you know. But
That's the other side of it, isn't it? We become a stalking horse, don't we? And we say, they're on 50 grand a week. We say, we'll give you 65. And then whoever any player's with, get their club match you. And you get a pay rise by courting our interest. That could happen with Shawcross, potentially. We've had two penalties against us in the game. No one speaks to the referees. They never complain. I don't know if it even gets you anywhere, but we're an easy touch. We're an easy touch to give decisions against. And in the longer term, when referees know that, they're more inclined to give them. Oh, they are. We don't complain about anything, ever. Sorry, I've made a bit of a racket there. I've got one last piece of paper to cut and I'm done. But whatever, you know, we don't complain. We need a knack. We need a knack. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't sort your back four out. And I'll give you what's the word I'm looking for? My case in point is Martin Skrtel. Knack, niggly, nasty, pull you to shreds from corners, blah, 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 blah. Still doesn't mean they're a good back four, because they're not. Because the manager hasn't got them organised. So you need more than that. You need an emphasis. I saw something today on Twitter where it was Gary Neville was talking. It was a clip from Sky. It's basically about the fact that Pep Guardiola does whole training sessions on set pieces. Roberto doesn't think that would be levels.
Well,
set pieces will win your league. Set pieces will win your leagues and lose your leagues. I'm telling you that now in my opinion.
Do you know, I've heard a counter argument from a friend of mine who's an assistant manager. We're actually going to try and get him on the podcast. He was an assistant manager just in the league just below the conference. He's got all his coaching badges and stuff, and he's now doing a bit of scouting for a side in the Championship. And there's another school of thought that if you practice in set pieces like that, and that, you know, you've got players stood round bored, you know what I mean? So
stood round what did you say?
Bored. Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, each single one. If you take think about the time it takes, you set up your set piece, you got the people attacking and defending, comes in, ball comes across, then you got your coaching moment, you know what I mean? So your time there. And you know, it's just
professional football, mate. It's professional football. If you're doing an hour training session with the kids, you don't want them bored because it's kids and they've got an hour. They're professional footballers, mate. I don't care if they're bored.
I'm sorry, but one of the things at the professional level is you've got to keep your training, different. You've got to change it up all the time. You know, so have you ever been bored of your job, Chris? Because you're a professional. Have you ever been bored?
Not bored, no. I'd be too busy. I wouldn't let myself be bored.
All right.
In my job. I'd never be bored in my job. I might be other things. I might be disillusioned or from day to day, but I would never be bored. But if I was, do you know what? That's the way it is, isn't it? If I've got something to do, I've had to do jobs that are boring because they've had to be done because it's an integral part of what I do, which is basically the same thing. It's a massive part of it. It's like saying, I don't know, let me have a think. I played a lot of snooker, as you know. It's like a professional snooker player saying, you're very badly, mate. I won't practice that shot where you get position off the black to the yellow, you know, to clear up the colours, because you only do it once a frame. But actually, if you don't get that position on that yellow and you miss it and your opponent clears up, you won't win many tournaments if you can't play that one shot. If you can't get position to start them colours off to clear up, you won't win many tournaments. But it's only one shot. It's only one shot that may or may not come up in a frame. But you've got to learn, practice it like you have many others, because it's a major facet of the game, just like set pieces are in football. And to say you don't have to practice them because they're a bit boring is absolute. I don't care if whoever says that. I don't care if it's Pep Guardiola. I don't care if it's God. It's ridiculous. It's a massive part of the game. It's got to be practiced and acknowledged. There's so many different, you know, it's just getting a structure in place. Set pieces are different. We know you've got corners, free kicks. They come in from different angles, but you've got to set up to deal with them. And everyone's got to know what the jobs are. And we're not doing that at all, are we? You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying. And for me, it's the scheme of it where we're actually positioned ourselves that needs to be sorted out. It's where we are in terms of marking. It's our actions on what we're going to do when the ball comes into the box, and it's our aggression in the penalty area. For me, that's the key, you know. And there's only so much that can be, you know, and that still lies with the manager, in terms of the, you know, where he's, you know, and the coaches, where he's getting the players to stand or be for the ball coming in. At the end of the day, where he's getting it, you know, getting to mark him. Because at the end of the day, I've said that twice, this is turning into absolutely a
game, isn't it? It doesn't matter, mate. It's allowed. At the end of the day, over the moon, it's 3 points, game of two halves, job done.
Yeah, this is it. But basically, like, the opposition, every different, you know, no two teams attacks a corner in exactly the same way. You know, when we've conceded the different corners that we've conceded, Liverpool attacked the ball in a completely different way than Bournemouth did when we conceded from the corner there. And very different again from Scott Dan. So it's that scheme of what you're going to do, where you're going to be in terms of, where you're going to have players when they defend, you know, to defend the ball, to mark the opposition. It's where you're going to be in that, you know, in that circumstance. So, I think a little bit of practice on corners wouldn't hurt. But I think
I'll tell you what it might do, mate.
I think it's a little bit more complicated than just running a few training sessions on them. I think it's down to the manager's scheme as well.
Well, it is, but it's a start, mate. He's got to put it's all about emphasis. He's got to put the emphasis on it. But I tell you what, if we start doing a few sessions about defending corners, do you know what? Someone's got to take them corners, so they might get a bit of practice in taking them as well. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, really.
What would it be like on Saturday? If you don't mind me asking. Sorry to cut across you. But I didn't see any Everton corners, I think, because I've only seen the 20-minute highlights. So.
I can't really remember. Other than at one point during the game, Leighton Baines went over to take one and he put both his hands in the air. And the fella in front of me says, "What does that actually mean?" And I said, It must mean I'm not going to hit the first man, I'm going to hit the second man. And he did. And we laughed about it. And that's all I can remember. I don't think we had loads, but I don't think we were a particular threat, you know, from any corners. But we never really are we? The only two decent headers I've seen from corners this season. One was in pre-season by Tyus Browning, and the other one was Funes Mori when he scored it. Wherever he scored, I can't even. Was it Bournemouth he scored?
It was Bournemouth, yeah. It was a proper header that as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a proper header. But it's, you know, it's just putting the effort in, Martinez. Putting the effort in and focusing on it. Moyes could focus on it. We had other weaknesses, so why can't he? It's an arrogance, it's an insult to the sport to think that you don't have to rehearse that sort of thing and practice it and marshal your back line just thinking play your way out of trouble. It's not gonna work. That's why people are disillusioned with Martinez. Nobody really doesn't like him, other than the fact he just uses the same old cliches all the time. But it's the fact that he just hasn't got the respect for the game. He doesn't believe that clean sheets win your games, and that's why we don't keep them. Other people still expect us to keep clean sheets. I was having a debate again on Twitter with someone the other day, and his view was, "Oh, we'll keep one eventually." Law of averages, that doesn't wash that at all. Law of averages doesn't get you anywhere, because the way we defend, we will not keep clean sheets. I don't care how many games we play, we're just not set up to keep them, are we? Because, you know, we're not set up to keep clean sheets.
Well, I think again, the clean sheet thing though comes down to concentration as well, and I think we have a side that's concentration is poor. If you go to the second goal the other day, Riyad Mahrez was in acres of space there, acres of space.
Yeah,
it's a wet day. Well, it looked wet to me. Was it raining there?
Yeah, it was. I'm soaking, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a wet day, and a ball gets played through for Vardy. Howard comes right out, and believe me, this is just the last mistake in that move, because there's no way that Riyad Mahrez, you know, perhaps their most dangerous player at the end of the day, certainly the most dangerous midfielder, the one that you really have to stop, you know what I mean, because he's the one who can do things with the ball. Basically, he's got nobody around him for like 15 yards. So Cleverley's further up the pitch. Barkley's further up the pitch. And there's nobody, like Gareth Barry has gone out to the left to cover the lad who's on the left-hand side there. So there's nobody in the middle with Mahrez. Stones is stuck between, like, Vardy, who just basically runs round the back of him, makes a curved run round the back of him. Because he's either got to go and then the ball gets slipped, or he's got to just try and hold it up and try and play, Vardy there, Vardy offside, or he's got to hope that his goalkeeper can come out and sort of cover and smother. Instead, as I say, Howard comes blazing out. I think he's still sliding, and takes out Vardy. And Vardy was going away from goal there. Really? Again, he just needed to be on his feet. You know what I mean? Instead. And just out there making himself big, because it would have been much harder for Vardy to score. Cause he was going away from goal slightly. It was poor goalkeeping. But for me,
you're right.
For me, Cleverley's way out of position. If McCarthy.
Cleverley had a poor game. Cleverley was poor.
Was he?
Nothing. Well, very poor.
I'll tell you what he did, because I'm going to go on to the third goal now. you know, we're talking about concentration. If McCarthy's in there, by the way, that second goal doesn't happen because McCarthy's got the discipline to be back there. And I thought Cleverley was way out of position. The third goal was, for me, one of the worst goals I've seen us concede in a very long time. And that's saying something. Because
that is saying something.
It goes out for a throw-in. Like Stones is way over in the right back position. He's just sort of slid to keep the ball in, has he? Or something like that. And he's way over in the right back position. And Funes Mori's on his own in the middle. And we played the ball off their player, and Seamus Coleman's got the ball for a throw-in. Coleman's like looking for options, and Cleverley comes steaming into a gap there, asking for the ball. Now, Coleman knows that John Stones is out of position, because he's over by the corner flag. I don't know if it was off the camera, so I can't see whether Stones is still getting up at that point, or if he's just, you know, not, if he's just sort of walking back over. But
I can't remember, and
but Cleverley keeps calling for the ball, like, you know what I mean, because he's got that yard of space, and even though, you know, Stones is out of position, Coleman thinks, all right, I'll give him the ball, and throws him the ball. And what does Cleverley do with it? He just lays it straight back to him to hit up the pitch. You know what I mean? He hits it up the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're screaming for the ball like that, I assume you're going to be doing something with it. Now, again,
yeah, you threw on the man in, haven't you?
I'm not slating Cleverley as a player. I'm slating just what he did during this game, because he had a poor game. I think he's made a good start to his Everton career, but you know, these are the examples of composure and concentration at the end of the day, and basically he just lays the ball back off because there's a slight bit of pressure. There's still 2 yards behind him, the Leicester players. Coleman whacks it up the field, but unfortunately it hits Mark Albrighton, whose arms are slightly raised in front of him. But I know you've got a thought about this. The rule about offside says that if it hits your hands and your team gets an advantage from it, it's a free kick. Unfortunately, that's all made thingy by the fact that the referee's out of position and is behind a Leicester player anyway. So when you see the thingy, John Moss, the poorest referee in the Premier League, misses this handball, and it goes over to Okazaki, who is, you know,
finished well.
I think he's Japanese for thanks very much for the easiest goal I'll ever score. You know, but it was just a comedy of errors.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, it was. But on the handball, now, I haven't got the rules and the laws in, well, it's laws in it, not rules, but I haven't got them in front of me. And, you know, nobody, I can't remember when was the last time they read the rules, but it is not my understanding that if it hits your hand and there's an advantage, it's a free kick. Because they could hit your hand from in any number of ways. It's got to be deemed to be handball in the first place. And the definition I tend to get off referees is that if hands are in an unnatural position, unless it's absolutely deliberate handball, which you don't really tend to see, because at the end of the day, no one does it deliberately. It's very rare someone does it deliberately. It's if your hands are in an unnatural position, that's what tends to be the trigger to give these decisions. Now, for me, where his hands were, I wouldn't have given either. Because if he hadn't hit his arm, he'd have hit his chest, because his arms are up against his chest. So he'd have bounced back off his chest instead of his arm, but the end result still would have been the same. If he'd stuck his arm out and he'd have hit his arm, I'd have given it. But the fact it was within the line of his body, for me, I don't see that as handball, ever, particularly. You know, I just don't see it as that. Now, that might be right, it might be wrong. But I think that plays a part in referees' minds, is whether their arms are out. If you're not, you know, I always remember a penalty we conceded It was against Arsenal. I think it was a Highbury. It would have been Thierry Henry. I think it might have been in that 7-0, you know, the day after we, or the game after we qualified the Champions League. It was up against Alan Stubbs. And Henry took it into the area on the right-hand side. And he basically scooped it up onto Stubbs' arm from about a yard away. Stubbs' arm was down by his side. And the ref gave a penalty. And you're like, well, you know what I mean? If they put his arm out, it's a penalty. But his arm was just by the side of his body. And he just scooped it up onto his arm and gave it. They gave the penalty. And I'm thinking, that is not a penalty. How can you give that? And that's the other side of it, I suppose. But that's just the way I see it. And that's what I've had said to me. That's a penalty. His arm's in an unnatural position. And that's, I don't think they were particularly. I didn't shout for it at the time. Some people did give it. Some people will. I accept that.
Yeah, I mean, again, regardless of whether it is handball or not, it's us, yeah, us shooting us ourselves in the foot at the end of the day, and that's, you know, it's composure, it's concentration. At that point, you know, and let's go for the third C in there as well, probably coaching. You know, that does need to be sorted out at the end of the day. We need to really tighten up. We need to, you know, be focused and concentrating for the whole 90 minutes of the game, plus whatever the referee hands on. And I say that because of the Bournemouth game. It doesn't matter whether the supporters have come on the pitch to celebrate a goal at the end of the game. Enough excuses now. You know, enough. It's just, you know.
I agree with you. And, you know, the thing that annoys me most about all of this is, you know, as I'm getting a bit older and the fact I go to the match and take kids and don't swear, you become a bit more mellow and appreciative of things the opposition do occasionally. Not overly appreciative, but you might say to your mate, good touch that, nice finish that, good goal that. I can hardly remember it. I can hardly remember the last time when I went, good goal that. You know, good way to move that, great finish that. All we ever say is, you know, done it again. You know, we're just giving goals away. No one ever outclasses us, outmaneuvers us. It just tends to be our own downfall all the time. Don't get me wrong, the fella scored a worldie at Bournemouth, didn't he? But it was a hit and hope, and it went the right way. That's fine, but
he wasn't closed down.
He wasn't closed down. Full stop. They all looked at each other. Once I think Coleman ran out, and then too late. But actually being outworked. Was it Barry? Was it? Well, I think Coleman looked at Barry. Barry went and Coleman stayed.
It's either Barry or Galloway. Yeah.
I think Barry
may have been in the box for the cross, to be honest. I think it might have been Galloway. I think, remember, we talked about they were doubling up on Galloway. But anyway, regardless of who it was, it was the closing down. You close him down, the percentage of chance that he's got to score the goal goes down.
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. But we need to start looking forward now, don't we? You know, we've looked back, we've said it all. It's getting a bit samey. You know, we've got three games, haven't we? Now in the matter of days, two of which are at home, aren't they? We've got Newcastle away, Stoke, and Spurs. Now, I don't think we're going to have an hour analysing these three to death. For the main reason being that, as we've alluded to, our problems are our own, rather than, you know, that of the opposition. But, you know, we've got Newcastle away, which is always a toughie, innit? Always a tough place to go. Personally, in the grounds I've been to, I know some referee recently said Stoke and Everton were two of the most intimidating grounds for referees. I've been to Newcastle about 8 to 10 times, and I think Newcastle's probably one of the most intimidating grounds that I've been to for decisions.
I guess when they're
not aggressive overly.
When they're not moaning about firing somebody, you know, I mean, they're the most Premier League out of Premier League clubs in terms of, you know, that addiction in the Premier League of firing people. You know, Ashley out, manager out, tea lady out, you know what I mean? Ball boy out. It's a different protest every season with that.
Well, it is, but we wouldn't want Mike Ashley in charge of our club either. But listen, fans, it's the only way things happen. So, you know, we, you know, fans are bickering all the time. Some, the ones who want change are criticising the ones that are apathetic because nothing will ever change with that attitude. We've got fans complaining about the board, the CEO, the manager, the coaching. You know, that's what happens, isn't it?
I have to say, I do object to the word apathetic. You know, again, that's you know, that's the sort of language that's used by the ones who want change. You know what I mean? But people who might not want the regime to change, or might at least appreciate what the regime has done, are not apathetic. They might be, you know, might argue that they are realistic. You know what I mean? In that what the Premier League's about at the moment. But again, that's a debate for another time. But you're totally right. You know, fans can make a change at a club. You know, they're not always right. Not always right, but. In Newcastle's case, they've had some real divvies in charge over there, like so. Yeah, I bet they'd have Alan Pardew back, though.
Well, quite, yeah, quite. You know, it just shows you, doesn't it? But there was a lot more to that than meets the eye, I think, from what I can gather.
Yeah,
but,
not joking here, though. Flipping heck. Yeah.
Joking here, jeez. What can you say about him?
Well, his name says it all if you say it quick enough. Joking here.
I'm telling him. Joking here, aren't you? Yeah, he's right, lad.
So, yeah, we got that. As I say, then we got Stoke at home, which I remember last season being a Lee Mason game. I was home for it. You know, I just got home for Christmas. And, yeah.
No one could accuse you of picking your games, and
Stoke at all. I remember getting home and saying I came over here to get away from all the rugby, and Stoke at home. And if you remember it, we played a through ball, and I can't remember who it was taken down by the last man. The referee bottled
Baines. Baines was taken down by, yeah, John Walters.
That was it. Lee Mason waved play on. And they went up the other end, I think, and won a penalty. He's down there with John Moss, Lee Mason. So I remember that, and we got beat 1-0 in a dire game in miserable conditions. It was freezing, it was wet, and no fun at all. But Stoke, they're starting to come into a bit of form, which is frightening. And they're exactly the sort of side who can come to Goodison and cause us trouble. It's not going to be an easy game at all. Have you got any feelings on it, mate?
Exactly the same, really. Exactly the same. You know, it's going to be a tough game. Oh, you know, will we be up for the fight? I don't know. It'll be like all Premier League games are at the minute. It'll be a tough game, but I'm more concerned about us than anybody else. I'm just concerned about the way we set up and play. We can blow teams away when we want to. We need to get we need to concentrate on getting the first goal and dictating the play rather than other teams. We have possession. That doesn't mean we dictate the play. We get the play dictated to us by the opposition that let us have the ball in certain places. It looks like we're dictating it because we've got the ball, but all the opposition do is press certain places at certain times to let us have the ball in safe areas and then wait for the mistakes. And we need to, you know, we need to be dictating the game now rather than others. But yeah, Stoke is what it is. You can't really get away from that. They have got some good players, some, you know, a few more footballers than they used to have. But it'll be a tight game, as will Newcastle. I'd take 4 points now, to be honest, from the two of them. Which I don't say very often. I'm always, you know, but I will take, the way it's been, I'd take 4 points from them two now. And then, to be honest, Spurs too far away. Because, you know, two games in between, you're looking at injuries, you're looking at suspensions, potentially. So you just don't know. You're looking at form, you're looking at disgruntled people, fans, whatever. You just don't know what things are going to look like in early January for everybody, not just us. So it's too hard to even guess, talk about, isn't it? really. We'd just be guessing. Will McCarthy be back? Will he not be back? Will McCarthy be fit? You know, you just don't know who's going to be there, do you? So I'm not really going to try and read too far ahead into it. But I think those two games are big games. Newcastle will be tough, but they're under pressure, aren't they? At home, they're under pressure. You know, if we can get the first goal there, 1-0 up after half an hour, the fans will start getting a bit edgy. The Christmas cheer will be gone and they'll be on McLaren's case again. That's what we've got to do. We've got to go to their place and try and play them, dictate the game to them and look at their circumstances, you know, and try and work that to our advantage. Whether we do, time will tell, but that's the way I see that game. I don't think there'll be many changes. Baines will stay in. McCarthy will come in for Cleverley. I hope he doesn't play Cleverley on that left of the three behind the striker, because it's just not his position at all. It's time for Kevin Morales to be getting a game. Great finish for his goal on Saturday. If there's any silver lining to come from Saturday, it's the fact that in his little cameo he did do something which justifies an inclusion in the next game, because people who shout, "I love Morales," always have. I think he's got loads to offer. But when he was getting his 10 or 15 minutes, as you'd expect, he wasn't making an impact because he's only getting 10 or 15 minutes. Well, actually, he did this time. So now's the time to be playing Morales, Barkley and De La Feu behind Lukaku, and then playing Barry and McCarthy.
Can I ask about De La Feu the other day? Because a lot of the reports talked about him being frustrated, and like all the highlights seem to have him being involved in the goals, but as the game went on and they doubled up on him, he was cutting a more frustrated figure. Do you think he's in need of a rest?
I don't know if it's a rest. He just needs to understand things a little bit better. You know, decisions, unfortunately, he's made his own bed in relation to getting decisions for little fouls, because he's thrown himself around so much this season. Rightly so, referees are going to see him when he does get a nudge and go, "Ah, Tim, sorry, mate, you're not having that." And that frustrates him. But after time, they're not fouls anyway. He gets a little nudge and he's just looking for them too soon.
Yeah.
The stage Barkley went through last season when he threw himself on the deck against West Ham, and then possibly in the derby, I think he did it. And just get out of it, snap out of it before you really get a reputation for it, and just concentrate on playing football. He's light, isn't he? You know, he's a light player. He's small. He's nimble. If you're going to come up, I know he's more likely to come up against a left back, but if you're coming up against centre halves, which you will do from time to time, they're going to be a lot more physical than him. So he's got to be stronger. If he doesn't get his decision, he's got to get on with the game.
Yeah. Agree.
He did get frustrated, yeah. But that's just something, that's just part of the learning curve for the lad, isn't he? He's a young lad, but he unlocks defences, and you've got to, them sort of players, you've got to just swallow the negatives, because as we've seen, he creates chances, he creates goals, and that's what we need. That's what wins your games. Sometimes you've got to take the rough with the smooth, but we don't want, with the greatest of respect, we don't want 11 Cleverleys, safe players, 11 Rodwells, 11 Joe Allens, 11 whatever. You need these players that are going to influence games, and he's one of them.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I'm not slating him. It's like, I was just wondering if he...
No, I know you're not.
If he looked like he needed the rest, because I know it was suggested afterwards that perhaps Lennon might come in this weekend. Is it the weekend? Yeah, it is actually, isn't it?
Yeah, so
I don't even know what day it is. How did Lennon look when he came on the other day? I did see one good bit of build up play where he sort of came inside and then played in Coleman. Didn't he do much?
Yeah, he didn't do much. Not really. I think he, generally speaking, I think he always flatters to deceive as a rule of thumb. I don't think he's fit to lace Morales' boots, in my view. And there's no way he should be getting a start ahead of Morales for me.
I'm not talking about ahead of Morales. I'm talking about resting De La Feu.
Instead of De La Feu.
Yeah, you know, give it. And I'm not saying like, you know, I'm just saying give De La Feu a break. Maybe, you know, against someone like Newcastle, and they play, you know, play him against Stoke or vice versa, to be honest. Because at the end of the day, we've got a ridiculous amount of games over the next 4 or 5 weeks now. So we are going to have to start using our squad a bit. And I was just, you know, wondering if at some point over the next couple of days, would you give Delafeu a break and play Lennon?
Yeah, I would. You've just taken the words out of my mouth. It's all about squad management when you've got the amount of games coming up, especially when we've got League Cup, FA Cup, all kind of, you know, two-legged League Cup games at that. Mm. We've got a lot of games in the next month. And yeah, I would do. I'd be more inclined to, I don't know, actually. I'd probably be more inclined to play, to start Lennon away from home, maybe, where he might benefit from the space, you know, that might be created by the home team trying to attack us a bit more. I say that because I think Delafeu's got more ability in tighter spaces to beat men, so it might be better suited at home.
Mm. It's just against Stoke. Stoke are arch wind up merchants. Mark Clattenburg will be the referee that day, by the way. And our old friend Lee Mason is the referee against Newcastle. So,
They're all as bad as each other, aren't they? But
same
box that's for the gaffer, isn't it? We'll have to see how that pans out. That's for the gaffer, that for me. But yeah, you know, that's pretty much it on the football side of it, I think. But you wanted to just make reference to the takeover talk, didn't you, very briefly before we finish?
Well, I did just before that, going back to the rest of the players. We discussed Kone the other week, and I think it's time for him to come out the side. I agree with you about Morales. It's Kone out, Morales in at this stage now. You know, once a player, I can forgive a bad game, you know what I mean? And then you sub him, 60 minutes done. But once you've had a couple of bad games, you know, I think it's time now. You've dropped out of the side and somebody else gets a chance. And Morales took his goal fantastically the other day. What a flick by Barkley, by the way. The awareness, you know, not much was made of this, but, you know, the awareness of where Morales was there and, you know, to sort of shape as if he's going to shoot because he'd had a couple of shots before. And just at that stage in the game, just to play that perfectly weighted little flick to Morales was a fantastic bit of skill. Absolutely beautiful bit of skill. And, you know, Barkley is really starting to blossom into the player that we have hoped and want him to be. You know, so I guess moving on from there, like you mentioned, we've always talked that we try to avoid speculation on our podcast, so that's why we haven't talked about airplanes and transfer rumours and things like that, you know what I mean? So because every week there's a different transfer rumour, and you know, I know they say in that X-Files program the truth was out there, but there's so much rubbish out there as well. So we just deal with the facts, and there has been some movement on the ownership of Everton this week. Basically, is it windy there, mate?
Yeah, come on. I'll just open the door. Go on, you're all right.
Hey, yeah. No worries. I was going to say, flipping heck, that sounds grim, nah. Glad I'm here after all. But there's been movement on a possible takeover for Everton. John Moores, a famous name in our history, but not the same person or family, is rumoured to be part of a consortium. He's the former owner of San Diego Padres, the baseball team in America. All we know at this stage for sure is that they're in the stage of due diligence at the moment. So basically, you know, at this stage, we can't really say too much more. We don't know enough about the owners of the opposition, of the people who are looking to take over. So it's a period of uncertainty for Everton. There's lots of information and articles out there that you can read about it. All we can say really is that we're just going to watch this space, isn't that right, mate?
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, we've seen due diligence, looking at the accounts, We've got till the end of January on an exclusivity agreement. Let's see how things pan out. There's nothing more to be said on it, really. I'm not going to waste time talking about something that may not happen, because we've been here before. Although, if it's on the back of the Times and the Telegraph, it's got a little bit more credibility than some of the other things that have happened in the past. So we'll see what happens on that score. But yeah, busy week for the Blues. Busy week for everybody, really. But well, if we can wrap it up now, because I know I've got a few little jobs to do before I hit the sack.
Thought you'd finished on your rapping there, mate.
No, I'm done with your rapping, mate. I've got a few other little bits to do before I crack on, so we'll wind it up there if we can.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody knows where we are, don't they now? Toffeecast 1878 on Twitter and Facebook, and
Gmail.
We don't worry about emails, Gmail's in it, and yeah. What is it? Toffeecast1878@gmail.com, and what is it? Stitcher,
SoundCloud, Podomatic,
SoundCloud,
yeah,
iTunes, blah blah blah.
So we won't be recording a podcast because I'm going away over the next few days, and Chris has barely just figured out how to use a computer. So but basically I'm going to be away for a few days in a place that's got very little internet. I'll be able to see the games, touch wood. So we'll be back in time for the League Cup game. Provided that, you know, we can get the time there. Our home League Cup game, which is probably, yeah, this is our most important spell of the season now. So,
a shadow of a doubt, mate.
So let's hope that when we get back, we're coming back with some good news and lots of exciting Everton goals and four clean sheets or three clean sheets to talk about.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
We live in hope. But I just want to say, Blues, thanks very much for listening. It's been fantastic. Just the response that we've had from everybody. Please pass on to your relatives and friends, like, you know, let us know where we're at and let them know where we're at, and just spread the word about our podcast if you can, and have a great Christmas and a wonderful new year to all Evertonians, and let's hope that, you know, this next year is a silver lined one for us. So
that's right, I'll echo those sentiments, and most certainly definitely all the best, Blues, and we'll catch up in the new year. Alright, mate.
Alright, all the best, Chris. Have a good one, mate.
Good lad, catch you soon. Alright, mate, I'll see you later.
Tell you.